Let's make a start. As I mentioned previously, this is part of a series of Shirim. I think it's going to be in the end a series of four. This will be the third out of four. On the issue of animals and our relationship with animals, if you remember, we had 2 weeks ago a Shir on vegetarianism, which I don't know if anyone's become a vegetarian since then, but we talked a lot about those issues. We talked about Tsar Balechayim, cruelty to animals and different perspectives, hashkafically and halakhically on that. And this week and next week I want to talk about the issue of pets in halakha, because there's an awful lot to talk about, and maybe I'll give you an overview in a couple of minutes of the kind of things that we're going to deal with, and then after that we'll move on to other things. Just in terms of prior notice, I will be away for 2 weeks in February. Not the first week in February, I'll be here then, but the second and the third Wednesday in February, I will be away. I think that's the 7th and the 14th, something like that, or the 8th and the 15th. But I'm sure there'll be somebody here, and I'm sure they'll continue to have a share. So that's just an announcement. Another short announcement, that it's a particular pleasure for me to have my wife Sarah here this morning. She doesn't normally come to the share, but we're on the way somewhere else, so she came in, so I'll have to be on my best behavior this morning, because I'm being supervised. The topic of pets is an interesting one. An interesting one. And no comment, no comment. No comment in either direction. These days people have different relationship with their pets and animals than they used to have back in the old days. Until about 100, 200 years ago, other than very rich people, we'll have a look at the Yavit soon and see what he has to say about that from the 1700s already, but most people, if they had animals, those animals were either farm machinery or transport tools to ride on or food. That's what they were. They didn't relate to them as friends. Today, we're in a situation, for many years now, that people often love their animals more than their children. Certainly where I come from in England, that's not uncommon. It's a known fact that the Royal Society for the Protection of Cruelty to Animals was set up at least 70, 80 years before the Royal Society for Protection of Cruelty to Children. And everyone knows, if they've lived in England, that animals are central. People have topsy-turvy attitudes towards animals. I remember just a few years ago when there was a series of piguot happening in Israel, and at one point they strapped bombs onto a donkey and sent the donkey out. And at that point many people were up in arms and said, that's unacceptable, what's it got to do with donkeys, why are you killing donkeys? It's a terrible reflection in the sense of how people's perspectives have been skewed, where the killing of people they can be blasé about, but animals not. On a more positive note, and this is true, people in America at least, probably in California, make bar mitzvahs for their dogs. And if you, I'm not making this up, if you go online, weddings for their animals. Wow. So you can go online and find little pictures of dogs in Talasim with Magen David having their bar mitzvahs. Clearly that kind of approach and attitude is hashkafically on its head, and we don't need to really discuss it. But we do need to discuss, is there anything halachically or hashkafically inappropriate or challenging about owning pets, even if we have a correct attitude towards the way we relate to them? Are there circumstances in which owning pets is prohibited, is problematic? And these are the kind of issues I want to talk about. Over this week and next week, amongst others, I'd like to talk about the issues of dangerous pets. My sister-in-law for a while bought a dog in Beit Shemesh, and I don't think it was a dangerous dog, but it certainly got everybody very scared. It was a dangerous dog. Alright, it was a scary dog. I never actually saw the dog, but they were forced to get rid of it because the locals were running in all directions when the dog came out of the house. What about feeding animals? Do you really have to feed your animals before yourself? Is that a halacha or is that just a minhag? What about giving our animals non-kosher food? Is there an issue there? What about meat and milk, chametz on Pesach? We'll deal with those today. What about castrating or neutering animals? This is an important topic that people want to know about, because many people feel that there is a need to have their animals neutered. We'll talk about whether that's really the case, but talk about the halachic issues. And then there are many, many issues on Shabbat, which I want to deal with mostly next week, because they're quite detailed and very interesting. Most important of which I think people are bothered by is, are pets muksa on Shabbos? Can you lift up your dogs and cats and pet them and take them out for walks, etc.? Does it matter if the pet is unhappy? As I mentioned last week, there are people who claim that their pets are psychologically down, depressed, if they don't get petted, and Nebuch Shabbos is a depressing day for their pet, and therefore they say that maybe that's a real issue, and that will give them heterim and hilchas muksa. So we'll talk about that. Walking a dog on a leash on Shabbat with no Eruv, we'll look a little bit in the halachas of Eruv, in which we don't often get a chance to look at. Trapping pets on Shabbat, if you have a very cheeky little puppy who's running around trying to get in and out of the house, shutting the door to stop the puppy running out of the house is a common thing, but it may actually be an Isser on Shabbos of quite significant proportions. And then we need to talk a little bit about guide dogs. There's been something of a discussion recently about this. There was a debate about 3 years ago between Rav Shmuel Rabinovitz at the Kotel, where there was a halachic prohibition made that they can't have guide dogs, seeing eye dogs for the blind at the Kotel. Rav Benny Lau got involved and said that that was unacceptable, and there's every reason why we should allow seeing eye blind guide dogs at the Kotel. And actually Rav Rabinovitz reversed his ruling on that and said yes, that they are allowed, and we need to look a little bit at the background for that. There's a very interesting tshuva of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Breisch, about the appropriateness of dogs in Jewish places like shuls, etc. So we can look at all of those, but let's start off today by some sources, some of which actually my son Asher pointed out to me, as to how people interacted with animals as pets back in the time of Tanakh and also in the time of Chazal. So let's have a look at the source, please, the sheet, source number one, and see what it says. Sorry about that, there's a bit of a loose connection there. It's clear that people lived very closely alongside animals, often in the same rooms as animals, although halachically there are problems. We always, in terms of keeping halacha, were never able to live in the same kind of mess that other people were living in. One of the reasons why proportionally less Jews died during the Black Death in the 1300s is because most people lived mamash in a refet almost. There was animal waste all over the house. Clearly, halachically, we're not able to do that, which obviously leads to certain hygiene levels. But it's clear that people lived alongside animals. And one source which is interesting is that of Yiftach. Remember the story of Yiftach, that he comes home from war, and he makes a very rash oath and says that anything that comes out of the house will be a korban. And in the end, of course, it's his daughter. But what does he expect to walk out of the house? The answer is an animal. Look at number one. V'hayah ha-yotzeh asher yetzeh midalti. Midaltei beiti, sorry. That whatever walks out of the doors of my house, likrati, it's to come and meet me, b'shuvi b'shalom, b'bnei Amon, when I come back from battle. V'hayah l'hashem v'alitihu olah. So clearly he's expecting an animal to walk out of his front door, which is an interesting perspective, and therefore people and animals obviously had close contact. In terms of psychology, we know that an animal has a nefesh, and we see this in Mishlei as well, yodea tzaddik nefesh behemto, that a tzaddik has a connection with the animals. They don't just treat them like a piece of machinery. They know their nefesh, they understand their nefesh, and they relate to their nefesh. Fascinatingly, although of course it's a mashal, it's not actually a story of something that happened, but when Natan Hanavi is sent by God to David HaMelech to criticize him for his relationship with Bathsheba, what is the moshul that Natan Hanavi gives as to what David has done to Uriah in his relationship with Bathsheba? It's the moshul of a beautiful pet. Look at number three. Ulurash, this poor person, again, this is a mashal, but it's giving you an insight into how people relate to this. Ulurash, ein kol ki im kifsa achat. This poor person, says Natan to David, only has one little sheep. Ketana asher kana, little sheep that he bought. And he sustains this. V'tigdal imo, and this little sheep grows up with him. V'im banav yachdav, and together with his children. Mipito tochal, it eats from his bread. Mikoso tishte, it drinks from his cup. Ubecheko tishkav, and it sleeps in his lap. Vatehi lo kazap. And it's almost like a child to him. Now again, this of course is not a story of someone that actually did this, but it's interesting that this mashal that he's using is of somebody who had a precious pet. He says, thus was Bathsheba to Uriah Hitti, and you've ripped that wonderful relationship apart. But it's interesting that he uses that. And the other source that I brought you in number four is that there was no shortage of exotic pets in the time of Tanakh as well. Perhaps not for everybody, but certainly for Shlomo HaMelech. Looking number four. Ki ani Tarshish leMelech bayam. The king had ships of Tarshish, which is up in Syria, I think, on the coast of Turkey. In the sea, im ani Chiram, together with the fleet of Chiram, who was of course the king of Lebanon, achat leshalosh shanim tavor, once in every 3 years the ships would go out, ani Tarshish, noseit zahav, and they would carry gold, the chesef, and silver, shen habim, shen hab, is ivory. There is a theory that the ancient biblical name for an elephant was Hab, and therefore Shen Hab was the tooth of an elephant. I heard that in Ralph Slifkin's museum place. So if it's right, it's right. If it's wrong, it's wrong. The modern word pill seems to be a modern word, not in Tanakh. And also the kofim, the tukiyim, and he had monkeys and parakeets. And therefore, clearly, there are many animals in Tanakh, some of which are clearly agricultural, but some of which are more exotic or pet-related. Dogs, interestingly, I didn't bring you all the sources, dogs get a bad press, and we'll get right onto that now in Halacha. Dogs in Tanakh get a bad press. They're usually represented as wild, dangerous, immoral, disgusting, and I brought you a whole range of sources at the bottom, which I'm not going to look at now, as to where dogs are referred to in Tanakh, and they usually, they're certainly not pets, and they're usually represented in a negative way. By the time you get to Chazal, animals are treated a little bit differently. If you look here, you'll see that there are references to certainly children having pets in the time of Chazal. Look at number five. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. They're talking about carrying on Shabbat, and what is considered to be chashuv in terms of something that you're carrying that you're reliable for carrying on Shabbat. And the Gemara here goes through a whole list of different things that a person might carry and whether they're considered significant or not significant for the laws of carrying without an Eruv. So Rabbi Yehuda on it says, the Rabbi Yehuda, af hamotzi chagav chai tamei. If someone has a non-kosher live locust, what would you do with a non-kosher live locust? Kolshu, even if it's a tiny one, you're liable for carrying on Shabbat. Why? Shematznei noto, because people keep them. Lekatan, l'schokbo, for a kid to play with. So a little insight that you see that certainly locusts, little stick, when I was a kid they used to have stick insects and things, you know, in boxes and stuff. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but it's this kind of thing. They had a little locust maybe for the children to play with, and they had to trust that they wouldn't eat them. But in number six as well, the Gemara talks about a little bird called a kalanita. It says the kalanita here, I'm not getting into all the details of exactly what it's talking about. Basically, it's dealing with tumas mates. And if you had a mate, if you had a dead body in one home and a room adjoining and there was a window in between, so that window would transmit the tumah from one room to the other room. But not if you blocked it up. If you blocked it up, then it will keep the tumah inside. But if you block it up with something that people would remove, and it's not there left there permanently, that doesn't count. So the Gemara, again, here in Bava Basra, goes through a whole list of different types of things that people might put in their window, which will be removed and which won't be removed. And it says, Kalanita, this little bird. Yaiv le yeluka, no. They might give it to a little child, this little bird. And Rabbeinu Gershom comments here, but Kalanita, of who? It's a little bird. Shekachash b'yote, it's very scrawny. It's very thin, meaning it's not worth eating. There's probably no point killing and eating it. The ein labasar, it's got no flesh on it. The hachadil yanuka, this chot. And it's suitable for a kid, for the kids to play with. Also, they didn't scratch, therefore they gave them to children. So you see here in the times of Chazal, certain things are given as pets for children to pet and to play with. One of my favorite sources always is number seven. Number seven is dealing with a shor hamuad. The shor hamuad is an ox which has been found to be wild. It's an ox that gores. And there is a machlokas in the Gemara here, quite a well-known machlokas in Bava Kamma here. How do you know if the ox is a dangerous ox or not? So Rabbi Yehuda says, if it gores 3 days, okay, and then 3 days it doesn't gore, so then you know that it's gone back to being a sure tam, a tame ox, and a safe one. But Rabbi Meir has a different shita. Rabbi Meir says it's not 3 days, but it's 3 times. If the ox gored 3 times, then it's called a shorah mu'ud. Look at number 7. Rabbi Meir oimer mu'ud, if it's considered a dangerous ox, she'eidu bo shlosha pa'amim, that Aiden came on 3 separate occasions and says this ox gored. So according to Rabbi Meir, now for Rabbi Yehuda it's easier because 3 days can be undone by 3 days when it was calm. But 3 times has to be undone by 3 times when it was calm. How do you know if it's calm according to Rabbi Meir? Says Rabbi Meir, v'tam, you know that it's calmed down again. Kol she'yu atinokot memashmashim bo ve'eino nogeh. If you see the children all over it, and it's calm and it's happy and it's not goring any children, then it's fine. So you ask yourself, like, Ribbono Shel Olam, why are the children playing with the Shorah Mu'ud? And the answer is, it's Eretz Yisrael, the kids play everywhere. You know what it's like. Next time you see a kid on a roof in Geula, like 5 kids smashing up something on the roof and going wild, so you'll know, Minagav Oseinu Biyadeinu, the kids used to play with the Shorah Mu'ud, and Baruch Hashem, everything was fine, and they all had Emunah and Betochen, and it all worked out in the end. But I'm being a little bit flippant, but in terms of the halacha, clearly that was something that the children would play with. Now, in terms of halacha lamaisa on owning animals, let's get into this issue. Chazal are very concerned about people owning dangerous animals. Look at number 8. Rabbi Nosson Omer. Minay shalo yigadel adam kelev ra. How do you know you're not allowed to raise a bad dog? Now we have to define what is a kelev ra. Betoch beto, in your house. And you're not allowed to have a shaky ladder that people might use and, God forbid, fall over and hurt themselves. Don't have blood on your home, meaning don't have anything dangerous in your home. So clearly a kelev ra, as we'll define in a minute, seems to be a dangerous thing, seems to be an isra, maybe even doraita, based on this pasuk. Elsewhere, it seems not just a bad dog, but regular dogs in number 9 as well. Says the Mishnah in Bava Kama, Lo yigadel adam et hakelev, ela im kein hayakashur b'shalshelet. You're only allowed to have a dog, now it doesn't specify here a bad dog, seems to be any dog, but we'll see what the halacha is on that, unless it's tied up with a chain. Dogs have to be tied on a chain. Rashi explains why. What are we worried about? Number 10, not just biting, but we'll see also barking. Et hakelev, mipnei shenoshech umenabeach, because it bites and it barks. It might cause a woman to miscarry. If a woman walks past the house and the dog suddenly starts barking, then she might get a sudden shock and it might cause damage, God forbid, and therefore even a dog that doesn't bite seems to be a danger. And the Gemara actually brings an interesting, very beautiful Gemara, which has bears a lot of the issues that we face today in different issues of abortion, whatever, which is not for now. So look at number 11. Tana Rabban, the rabbis taught in Bava Kama. Lo yigadel adam et hakelev ela im kein kashur b'shalshelet. He quotes the Mishnah. If you have a dog, it has to be on a chain. Aval megadel hu be'ir. But you can have a dog, hasmuch el sapara, in a city which is close to the border, the kosher bayom, tie it up by day, umatiru balayla, and let it run around at night. Why? Because it's dangerous, and you need the dog to protect you from people who might be crossing the border. Tani Rabbi Eliezer, hagol oimer, hamagadol klavim, kemagadol chazirim. If you raise dogs, if you breed dogs, it's like breeding pigs. Says the Gemara, says, lamay nafkamina, why, what does he add? Why do I care? What does he add by comparing it to pigs? Lemikum alea ba'arur. To place it in the curse. What is the curse? So there's a Gemara elsewhere which says that during the Second Temple period when there was a civil war between Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, and one of the brothers, I think it was Aristobulus, was besieged in Yerushalayim, and they used to bring up a Korban Tamid every day. Meaning they were at war, but at least they gave them a Korban, and they would pull up the Korban every morning to bring us a Korban Tamid. However, on one occasion, they were persuaded, instead of putting a sheep into the basket, they put a pig into the basket, and they pulled up this pig, and at that point, Chazal said, this was a terrible moment for the Jewish people, they put a curse on anybody who raises pigs for a living. Many, many years ago, completely unrelated, but I can't resist telling you, when I was a junior lawyer in London, I was asked to help out on a film financing matter, where they were financing a film made by a Jewish director with Jewish actors called Leon the Pig Farmer. And we all got taken to see this new release, whatever. It was not a very good film, but it was very interesting, and the story was of a Jewish guy who inherited a pig farm. But coming off the back of this Gemara, if you're interested in seeing the film, then maybe think of something else to do. But anyway, Amar Rav Bamin Yumi, Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman jumps in and asks, Bavel, but in Bavel, Ki'ira Smucha L'Safadam. In Bavel, meaning in Chutz La'aretz, and we'll see there are more picks up on this. It can be dangerous for the Jews in Chutz La'aretz. And they are considered the same as a city on the border, so they can have dogs that run around at night. Tirgumon, we understand from that, it's Na'ar Dor. Dangerous places in Bavel. Darish Rabbi Dostai. Now look at this beautiful drasha. It brings the posuk in Bamidbar. Uvenuchal Yomar, when the ark rested, Moshe said, Shuvah Hashem Rivavot Alfei Yisrael. That God should make rest, that the tens of thousands and the thousands of the Jewish people. What does it mean, tens of thousands plus thousands? L'lamdachah, this teaches us, says the Gemara, She'ein shechina shoyre al Yisrael pachot mishnayim alafim v'shnei ravavot. 22,000 is a magic number, apparently, in terms of the Shechina. And there's a whole debate in the Gemara, what does that mean? That we see the Shechina even rests on a minion, even less than a minion, three people learning together, one person learning, all different levels of Shechina. 22,000, apparently, is a relevant number, and they get that from this Pasuk, because two lots of 10,000 and two lots of 1,000. Chasar achat, if there's only one missing, then that would be bad thing. The haita isha mu'uberet, and there's a pregnant woman there, beinehem. V'ru'uya lahashlim, and she's ready to give birth. V'nabeach ba'kelet, and a dog barks at her, v'hipila, and God forbid she miscarries. Nimsa zegore l'shchina sheshistalek mi'israel. That dog barking at that woman has caused, God forbid, that baby to be lost. The Shechina is no longer with the Jewish people because one embryo was not brought into the world. And again, that brings into a whole question of abortion, how we relate to abortion, under what circumstances, which is not for now. And it brings the salutary tale at the end. Hahi itata, there was a woman, a da'alach lemipa bahahu beta, that went up to bake in a certain house, of a nabach bar kalba, and a dog barked at her, and Amalamare, the owner of the dog, said, loitis tefimine, don't worry about this dog, shekuli nibi, its teeth have been removed. Basically, he said, its bark is worse than its bite. Okay? Its teeth have been removed. Don't worry. It just barks. It won't do you any harm. Amrale, she says to him very cuttingly, Shakli tivutech, take your good wishes, v'shadle achzirit, and throw them behind you. Kfar nad vlad, my baby has already been dislodged. Meaning, she feels that she's already miscarried from the shock of hearing the dog, and then she says, take your good wishes and go somewhere else because the dog is dangerous even if it has its teeth removed. And therefore, this is brought in halacha. Let's just briefly look at the halacha lemaisa. The Rambam apparently rules this about all dogs. Number 12, over page 3. V'chein asur chachamim legadel chazirim b'chol makom. The rabbis prohibited raising pigs anywhere in the world. V'loi tekelev ele imken ha'kashur b'shalshelet. And a dog only if it's on a chain. Aval megadel hu klavim ba'ir, you can raise them in a town, hasmucha l'safari, which is close to the border. Ubayam kosher ubalala matiru, during the day you can chain it up, and at night you can let it roam around to protect the neighborhood. Ram chachamim oru megal klavim v'chazir mipnei shehizikam meruba umatzoi, because it said, cursed are those who raise dogs and pigs because they cause a lot of danger, especially in this case to the dogs. Interestingly, the Rambam said all dogs. He didn't specify bad dogs or good dogs. The Tor, when he passes his halacha number 13, says only a kelev ra. It sounds like if you have a good dog, you can relax. Number 13 says also la gadel kelev ra. You're not allowed to raise a bad dog. Elinkin hu asur b'shashelet, and then he gives the halacha that it has to be tied up by day and only allowed out by night in a dangerous area. Halacha lemaisa in the Shulchan Aruch, he brings down the lenient opinion that actually only a dangerous dog is a problem. Number 14, asur la gadel kelev ra. You're not allowed to raise a dangerous dog. We saw before. But the Ramah adds an interesting point. The Ramah lived in Poland, of course, in the 16th century. The Yesh Amrim Dahashka, nowadays, he says, living in Krakow there, Sha'anu shurim zein ha'akum. We're living in dangerous neighborhoods now. And who knows who's roaming around in the streets at night? The umois and the nations of the world. B'chol inyan shari. We're much more relaxed about having dogs now, he says, in Poland. Look and go see what the people do. It's interesting. Is having a dog a thing that from people do or from people don't do? It depends on where you're from. Like in Israel, there are places where everybody has a dog. You know, certain yeshuvim, you go there, and it's a place with dogs. In England, the religious people that I knew didn't really own dogs. I don't know what in America, people have dogs or they don't have dogs. Some yes, some no. If you live in the five towns, maybe no. If you live in Kansas, maybe yes. I don't know, maybe the opposite, whatever. But the remark, Comison, he says here, in Poland, people, the Jewish people own dogs because they need them. Mihu Nira, but you should know, he says, Inhu Kalev Ra, if it really is a bad dog, Sheyesh L'chush Yazik Ne Adam, it might endanger people, Osla Gadlo Elin King Kashur, B'shal Shelish Obaz. You have to make sure it's chained up properly and not allowed to upset anybody. And by the way, it's not just dogs. Look at number 15, the Shulchan Aruch brings about cats. Chatul Ra, a wild cat. Shimazik l'katanim, which is dangerous for children. It might bite or scratch children. Ein sarich la'ashivu l'balim. If you find it wandering around, there's no din of hashavas aveda. Meaning, you know, little Fluffy, whatever, it's a bad cat. Maybe it's not called Fluffy. And you don't have tiger. You don't have to take it back to its owner. You can keep it. Elakal moitzo horgo, anyone who keeps it, you can kill it. V'zoicha ba'aron, you can even keep the fur. Meaning, even if you know who it belongs to, a wild cat should be taken off the street. There should be no wild cats in the street. I wonder what he would say. Here the cats are not. Here the cats are not so dangerous. They're just, they're just a little bit of a nuisance. Although it's better than having rats, which is why the cats were brought in. I'm sure people would prefer to see cats running around than anything else. In terms of what constitutes a dangerous animal, so the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the first Lubavitch Rebbe in Russia in the 1700s, he writes in number 16 as follows: V'kein hamagadol kalev ra, afilu eino noshech, even if it doesn't bite, ela menabech, even if it just barks. Remember, as some pointed out to me, in Maratzur, we talk about hatzar hamenabeach, the enemy who barks at us. Therefore, shouting and screaming and barking is a dangerous thing. Maybe, God forbid, a woman who is carried from be scared of the dog. He brings down the curse again. If your dog is a nice little dog, it won't bark at anybody, you can keep it. He's lenient if you have a puppy, if you have a small dog, you don't have to tie that up at all. The achshav, nowadays, people are lenient, like we saw in the remark. Nagul hakil begidul kelev, she'enu kashu. People don't tie up their dogs at all by yom. V'yesh limud aleim schus. Maybe you can learn a merit on these people, you can justify their actions, im enu neshech, as long as he doesn't bite. But that's what Barav, but I don't think that's correct, because even a dog that barks, it should be locked up. V'lechein kari yorish shemayim yizaheh she'ei kashu b'shal shelet shal barzel. You have to not use iron, a chain, not just a rope, to tie it up. Ad shah shibnei adam chalchim yishan, until people go to sleep. Afilu ein on a shech, even if it doesn't bite, el at manabech, if it only barks. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, people have to be aware of this. If they have a dog which is dangerous in any way, even if it's just noisy or scary, then they have to either not have it, or they have to keep it locked up all day and only let it out at night in a dangerous area, etc. And my sister-in-law, when she got rid of her dog, eventually told me that when children were seeing the dog, they were so scared they ran across the road and didn't look at on the road when they were running across the road, which clearly means that the dog is causing more harm than good. Although I personally never met the dog. So, but people do tell me it was a little on the large side. Rav Yaakov Enden, I couldn't resist, brings an interesting piece just at the end before we move on to a different topic. Rav Yaakov Enden always has something different to say about almost anything. And here too, he says, number 17, Is bei isur moiseth. I'm going to tell you another problem with dogs. V'yichud ba'oisim klavim chalakim. He's got a thing against klavim chalakim. Dogs without fur, smooth dogs, arumim, naked dogs. I think he's talking about little sausage dogs and things like that. Dogs that are basically skinny little dogs with no fur. She'ein lehem sarot. They have no hair. V'konim otam, b'damim yikarim. And people, he says, pay a fortune to buy these little dogs, to play with them, to pet them and to play with them like little toys. People buy these dogs. V'gam mishum moishav leitzim asur. It is moishav leitzim. It is just a waste of everybody's time. Also, l'sachikim hem, you're not allowed to play with pet dogs. Shehu mamash masa arelim. It's a thing that only non-Jewish people do, and therefore Yiddish people shouldn't have little pet dogs, he says. It's not halacha l'maisa, but he definitely doesn't have a liking to dogs, especially dogs with no fur. So he had an interesting... I gave a share a few weeks ago about Rabbi Yaakov Emden's life. I recommend to you, if you want an insight into this, his autobiography, which was, it's called Megillat Svarim, was recently published in English in full for the first time. Actually not for the first time, but it was a more affordable print. It makes just a fascinating, fascinating read. When he tells about his life, he gives you so much information. I think at times you'd say too much information about his illnesses and his issues and his problems and his psychological questions and all sorts of amazing things. Many of it not at all rabbinic, as you'd expect it to be, certainly from the 1700s. But I recommend the book. It really is a fascinating insight into his and his father's life. It's called Megillat Svarim. Megillat Svarim, you can get it off Amazon, it's available freely. So that's the end of that topic. Let's talk about feeding pets, because this is important for people who have animals. By the way, just out of interest, is there anyone here who actually owns a pet? Hands up if you own a pet. Okay, so a small minority of people, okay, 4 people, 5 people, a few people used to own a pet, maybe when they had a bigger house and whatever, it's a lot of hassle, but feeding pets is an issue. Look what happens in the story of Rivka. Number 18. V'tomer shetei adoni. She said to him, drink, my lord. V'tamaher v'tored kadal yada. V'tashkehu. She brings down her water jug and she gives him to drink. Chalash kata, and she gives him to drink. V'tomer gam l'gmalech. I'm also going to get for your camels. Esh'av, I'm going to draw water for them. Ad inkilu lishtot, until they've all had enough to drink. V'yavo ha'ish, and then the man came, habaita v'yipatach ha'b'galim, and they opened up the camels. V'yiten tevin u'mispo l'gmalim, and they gave food to the camels. U'mayim lirchot raglav, and they gave they water on their feet. V'raglei anashim ha'sheito. V'yusum lefanav le'echol, v'yomer lo achal ad ki im divarti divarai v'yomer daber. They said to him, daber. So you can see, interestingly, when it comes to the water, they first give the water to the people, and then to the animals. But when it comes to the food, they first give the food to the camels, and only then to the people. And the Mephoroshim pick up on this, and learn that that is indeed the halacha. Go over to page 4, please. The Gemara in Brocha says, the Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Asur la'adam sheyochal, a person's not allowed to eat, kodem sheyitin machal lebehemto, until he gives food first to his animal, sheneemar, and he brings a posuk from the Krishma, v'natati esev v'sadech, v'sadcha levemtecha, it first of all says, God says, I've given grass to your animals to eat, v'hadar, and only then does it say, v'achalta v'savata, you can then eat, so first the animals, and then you, and in Gittin the Gemara goes even further, hachi amar rabbi hudam arav, osala la'adam sheyit om, not only is he not allowed to sit down and have a meal, but he's not even allowed to taste food, klum, at all, ad sheyitin machal levehemto, until he gives food to his animals, Shneimar, it brings the same posuk. Now, the question is this a din d'oraita? They brought a posuk in the Torah. Is this really a halacha d'oraita that before you sit down for Shabbat dinner, you have to feed the fish, or you have to feed the cat, you have to feed the dog? Or is it a din d'rabbanon? Or is it the minna? Is it nice middas, chasidus, etc.? We seem to have a machloikas. The Rambam, when he rules this din, rules it as a middas chasidus. Sin number 21. Chachamim rishonim. The earlier rabbis, hayanotnim le'eved mikol tavshil, the tavshil shayi oichlin, they would give, as a practice, their eved, any food that they eat, they would also give to the eved, that the eved shouldn't see them eating nice food, and the eved doesn't get to eat that food, they always give him the food. My son actually, we went away once for Shabbos, and when we got out the whiskey, we had a little private room for my in-law's 50th wedding anniversary. My son actually ran into the kitchen to the people who were serving dinner and insisted that they should all have a whiskey as well. It worked wonders for the service, by the way, and everything was very relaxed afterwards, to say the least. But I asked him where he was going. He quoted this halacha that he wanted to make sure that the waiters also had a little bit of whiskey. Umagdimim mazana behemoth, and they would also give food to their animals, the ha'avadim, and to their servants, lesudat atman, before they ate for themselves. But it sounds from the Rambam that it's Chachamim Rishonim. It was a practice of the earlier rabbis. It's lav dafka muta and oteh. It's not an issue of issa v'heta. However, the Mishnah Berurah brings down that it is the accepted psak that there is a real issa number 22. Machal behema gam came in yanei suda. One of the halachas of the suda, he says, huda asa lit om kodem sheyitzen v'heta. He says asur. You are not allowed to eat before you give to your animals to eat. Ukasav amagen Avram b'shem a sefer chasidim. We saw the sefer chasidim a few times last week. That it actually is very tough on being kind to animals and not cruel to animals. The lishkot adam kodem lebehema, you can drink before your animals. The chesivat it says berivka she'amr lahaeved shetei v'gam l'gmalechesh. So we see from here it's actually in terms of a issa v'heta, it really is a halacha. A person is not allowed to eat before they give to the animals, but they are allowed to drink. The bir halacha in number 23 brings down that the Magen Avraham says this is even a din d'oraita. He learns that it's a full-blown drasha, but the halacha lamaisa he says it's an asmachta. An asmachta is where Chazal bring a connection with a verse in the Torah for a rabbinic law, but it's not actually a Torah law. And the halacha lamaisa is that it's a din derabbanon, but it's definitely a din, and therefore if a person has pets, they should do this. They can even do this between washing and making hamotzi. If they remember, they washed their hands and they didn't yet feed their animals. They can even do that as a hefsek. They might want to wash their hands again after they fed their animals, depending on what kind of animals they have. Feeding the fish is usually fine, but that is definitely a halacha. What about non-kosher food? By definition, most pet food is not kosher. Is that a problem? I mean, you can give your pets kosher food. There's no problem with that. The question is, do you want to pay for your pets to have a bedatz? Or Mahadrim and Mahadrim Hechsher. So the Gemara says, basically, it's no problem. There are certain things that you're not allowed to get benefit from. The Gemara, the Mishnah in Temura, in number 24, says as follows. Says the Mishnah, Eilu heim ha-nikbarim. The following things have to be buried. Nikbar means you can't even burn them in case you come to use the ashes. They have to be completely buried, so no one's ever going to touch them again. Rambam says they are put in the brackets. Kol elu asurim v'hana'ah. They are not allowed to get any benefit from at all. And he gives a whole list. Sur haniskal, an ox which is gored and killed someone and needs to itself be killed. Egla arufa, the donkey which is killed because you don't know where the calf which is killed, or if you don't know where the dead body, which town the dead body was related to, etc. These are not things you're likely to have in your kitchen. So that's not a problem. Shora Nitzgal or Egla Rufa, Tipore Matzora, the birds of the Korban for a person with Tsaras, again, not likely to be very common. Seir Nazir, Petach Hamor, but here's the one that I'm interested in. Ubasar Bechalav. Basar Bechalav is Asa Bahana'a, which means that a person's not allowed to get any benefit from Doraisa, we'll see in a minute, mixtures of meat and milk. However, non-kosher food is not on this list. There is no prohibition on a Torah level or even on a rabbinic level from having personal benefit from non-kosher food. If somebody gives you, a side of ham as a gift, and it could happen in your office, people give you food, then there's no reason why you can't give that to a non-Jewish colleague. There's no issa hanor from non-kosher food. There is an issa drabonon to deal commercially, a trade maybe, in non-kosher food. That's a different question. But there's no issa hanor on the food itself. The Mishnah then goes on to say that elahim anisrafim, the following things need to be burnt. They don't need to be buried, but they still have to be destroyed. You can't benefit from. And the first one is on the list is chamet bepesach yitzareh. The chametz on Pesach has to be burnt, as we know. That's how we get rid of our chametz, and all other things on the list, which I'm not getting into now. Therefore, two things clearly which the halacha says cannot be benefited from, chametz on Pesach and meat and milk. Let's deal with meat and milk first. The Shulchan Aruch in Yoredeya, in number 25, says, Katuv b'Torah, Loisev Hashel Gidi v'chalei limo. Don't cook a kid in its mother's milk. Gimel pa'amim. And it says it three times in the Torah. This is quite well known. Echad le'issa bishul, wants to prohibit cooking the meat and milk. Echad le'issa achila, wants to prohibit eating the cooked meat and milk. Ve'echad le'issa hana'a, wants to prohibit any kind of benefit from any kind of cooked meat and milk. Ve'hoyte achila b'loshen bishul, the reason that eating is expressed in the language of cooking, says the Shulchan Aruch here, is lo'yma to tell us, she'ena osim in ha'Torah ela derech bishul. And this, I think, is well known. On a Torah level, meat and milk is only prohibited if it's actually cooked together at a certain temperature. If someone just has a slice of beef and a slice of cold cheese in a sandwich that is prohibited. Obviously you don't have to eat it, but it's rabbinically prohibited. It's not prohibited on the Torah level because it's not cooked together. Avalmid Rabbanon, also b'chol inyan. But the rabbis prohibited any kind of mixtures of meat and milk, even if they're not cooked. And here is the key for us. V'chol basa b'chala she'ena osam in haTorah, musa b'hanon. If it wouldn't be prohibited min haTorah to eat this, if it's only prohibited min Rabbanon, then there's no prohibition of benefiting from it. Now, that makes it very interesting for us, because not all types of mixtures of meat and milk are prohibited on a Torah level to eat. So if we can ascertain that it's prohibited on a rabbinic level to eat, then obviously you can't eat it, but you can get benefit from it. Such, and that means you can give it to your dogs and cats. Such as chicken, which is cooked with some kind of milk. And there is many mixtures of this kind. Chicken and milk would be allowed to give to your pets. Again, as I said, non-kosher food, no problem. But if it's meat and milk, chicken and milk, yes, beef and milk, no. Non-kosher meat or non-kosher milk is again only prohibited on a drabbanon level in terms of the meat and milk. Obviously, you can't eat non-kosher meat on a Torah level because it's not kosher, but in terms of mixing meat and milk together, that has a rabbinic prohibition, therefore you could give it to your animals. And an interesting question comes on, what about kosher meat which has not been shechted? If you have some kind of beef, dog food, which is mixed with milk, it's kosher milk and kosher meat, but it's not kosher because it's not been shechted. The poskim have different perspectives on this. Some are more lenient and some are more strict on this, but one thing is for sure, that a non-kosher dog food is absolutely fine. The issue of chametz on Pesach is very simple in terms of halacha, but not as simple in terms of what to do about it. Go over to page 5. The Shulchan Aruch clearly rules in number 26, also litin behemso la'eni yuhudi. Clearly you're not allowed to give your animal chametz on Pesach. That goes without saying. You're not allowed to own the chametz on Pesach. But what can you do with your animals? This is a big issue for people. Of course, a lot of animals do eat stuff which is chametz. So what can you do with them? So can you give them to a non-Jew? So the first thing the Shulchan Aruch says is, no. Also, litzen behem to la'eni yehudi la'hachila b'yimei ha'pesach. You're not allowed to give your animal to a non-Jewish neighbor, to or neighboring farm or whatever, so they can feed the animal on Pesach. Im hu yodea, if he knows shemachila top solet sorim shehu chametz. If you know that your non-Jewish neighbor is going to give the food, the animal chametz, you can't give your animal. You can't give the animal to the neighbor either. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do with your animal? What's that? So baby food, so baby food, one thing about baby food is, kidneys clearly is not a problem for baby food, and kidneys is not a problem certainly for labdil, for animal food, but chametz is an issue for baby food. It's not an issue for the baby, because the baby doesn't have to keep halacha, and if the baby needs chametz, the baby can eat chametz, but it's an issue as to how you can have the chametz in the house. And therefore that is a serious, kidneys is not a question, you're allowed to have kidneys in the house, you can have rice and corn and stuff, you just can't eat it if you're Ashkenazi. But for baby food it's fine, but chametz is not, it's not fine, therefore there has to be a shaila of, as if your baby duck needs to eat chametz, there has to be, you have to work out how you're going to store it, where you're going to keep it, etc. If it's what dilution, what kind of proportion. Yes.
Human beings don't eat bird seed. Is one permitted to give their pet bird seed on
a Pesach? Now, that's a very good question. Clearly, anything which is what the halacha calls nifsal ma'achila kelev, which is not edible by an animal, is not called chometz. Now, why would an animal eat something that is not edible by an animal? The answer is, it's nothing to do with what the animal thinks. There's a famous story, somebody, Rav Soloveitchik, gave a shiur once, so I hear the story from Ziegler, he could confirm or deny the story, I'm sure he was there. But there was a shear apparently, and the Rav said that toothpaste is nifsal ma'achilas kalem. Toothpaste is not edible by a dog, and therefore is not chametz. Therefore, you can use toothpaste on Pesach. You don't have to have kosher Pesach stick toothpaste. So one of the bright sparks in the shear next morning came up and said, Rabbi, I gave toothpaste to my dog, and the dog loves it. So I proved that toothpaste is edible by a dog. And apparently the Rav went mad with him and he said, we don't care what your Meshugana Hunt eats or doesn't eat. Like, we don't paskin halacha based on your dog. So the answer is, well, yeah, but you told us yesterday that it's whatever's nitzama achilat kalev. And the answer is, no, it's got nothing to do with the dogs. Rats eat rat poison. That doesn't prove anything. It just proves they've got rat brains, okay? The point is not what the animals do. The point is whether you relate to it as an animal feed. That's the point. If it's so disgusting that even you wouldn't relate to it as an animal food, then that's called nisam achilas kalev. Now bird seed, may or may not be chometz depending on how it's prepared. It doesn't mean it's chometz just because it's seeds. It might not be chometz at all. It might be kidneys. It might never got wet. That's a different shaila. But it's not nisam achilas kalev if you relate to it as bird seed. If you'd feed it to the birds, that is a problem. Yes. Right. Yeah, it has a hechsher, and it needs a hechsher. I mean, there's a lot of strange things that they hechsher him all through the year, water and, you know, this and that. But dog food really does need a hechsher on Pesach because the chometz issue is serious, and there is an issa d'oraisa of only chometz. What should you do with your animals if you can't buy food with a hechsher, which they didn't used to be able to do? So look at number 27. The Mishnah Berurah rules, if there's nothing else you can do, what is the minhag in Russia, he says? You can sell your animal to the local non-Jews. You have to sell it properly. The behema has to live with the non-Jew on Pesach. Or he has to buy the whole animal and the whole refet, the whole shed as well. The hanachri yachileno, the non-Jew has to give it whatever the non-Jew gives it. The lo yoshum esek imahem b'pesach, and you have to have nothing to do with the animals at all. They're owned completely by the non-Jew. Bilvad shelo yomar loy, you can't even say to the non-Jew, shiyachileno chometz, please give my animal chometz. That's not allowed as well. But kol zeh b'yesh lo hanachri mezoinus mishaloy, but that's only if the non-Jew earns the food. Aval im ein lo mezoinus, if the non-Jew has no food, the hayisrael moicheloy, and the Jew sells him food, dafka, to give to the animals, biyacha, together, in a behema, gamazanotel shehem chomet, yesh machmirim bezek. You can't do that either. The mechzik harama, because it looks like a loophole. It looks like you're just basically a legal fiction, that you don't really mean it. You've got the food, you've got the animal, you sold it all to the non-Jew. Shekol ika machira lo yeh ela kidei, sheyazin oto ha'akom b'chomet. Because you look as though you're just selling the animal, so that he'll feed it chomet. The question, we talked last Pesach about selling chometz, whether the whole concept of selling chometz just looks like you're a loophole, or whether it doesn't look like a loophole, whether it's valid, whether it's we talked about that then, but clearly there are limits. If you do this, then that's okay, but if you do less, then it's not. So that's just a few thoughts on feeding animals. The last topic I want to deal with today is actually in many ways the most problematic, which is neutering animals. Many people feel that they need to get their animals neutered. I'm not an animal expert, I'm not a vet, I really haven't got any professional opinion on this. Although I do know that there are different opinions, even, forget about halacha for a second, even within the world of animal rearing and pets, as to whether it is a good thing or a bad thing to have animals neutered. Obviously many people, their motivation is that they don't want the animal to get pregnant and cause them all the inconvenience of dealing with a litter of pets or whatever it is, or dogs, or get other people's animals pregnant. But actually it can be unhealthy for the dog or cat to have the cat neutered. Again, you can speak to different people to advise you on that, but it's not a simple matter. There are certain animal cancers which are improved by neutering, and certain ones which are made worse by neutering, and therefore there's a whole cheshvan on that side. But halachically, it's a major problem. Have a look at number 28. The pasuk in Vayikra says, Ma'uch v'katut v'natuk v'chaut lo takridu la'ashem. You're not allowed to offer as a korban any of these animals which have got, these are all different variations on the genitals of the animals which have been cut off or crushed or maimed or hurt in any way. These are all invalid as korbanos. It's considered a mum. Uba'artzachem, and wherever you live, lo tasu. Don't you do that either. The Rambam, therefore, paskens, based on this, is unanimous. Everyone agrees on this, number 29. Asur lahafsid evrei zera bein ba'adam bein behema. You are not allowed to in any way ruin the reproductive organs of a person or of an animal. Obviously, if there's a medical need in the case of the person, or maybe in the case of the animal as well, but certainly in the case of the person, then that's clearly acceptable if there's any kind of life-threatening issue and a person needs to have an operation. But this is one of the many factors, by the way, halachic, which is involved in people who have gender reassignments. The whole issue of gender reassignment is a fraught one in halacha, and it's an issue that's becoming more and more of a question, including in the religious community, where there are people who've had gender reassignments, want to have gender reassignments. There are cases in communities I know in North America where a young man from the community has become a woman, he's had a sex change operation, and now he says, look, I'm from, I want to come, I want to daven in the Ezes Nashim on Shabbos, and it's a whole interesting bunch of physiological, psychological, sociological questions involved in this subject. And interesting sources, by the way, very fascinating sources. They were doing these kind of operations even 1,000 years ago. There's an Ibn Ezra that deals with gender assignment operations on Chumash, not now. Maybe we can have a share about that. But this is one of the topics which comes up there, which is you cannot change the reproductive system of any person unless there's a medical need. Interesting Shiloh, which comes up in the reproductive, in the sex change question, is what happens if somebody is ascertained by a psychologist to be a serious suicide risk if they do not have a gender reassignment operation? That is where the interesting halachic situation comes in, because there you're dealing with pikuach nefesh, and that's a side issue. Says the Rambam, you're not allowed to do this to an animal. Chayav ha'oit, echad tamein, whether it's non-kosher animals, echad tahorim, or kosher animals, bein be'eretz Yisrael, bein b'chutz la'aretz, whether you live in Israel, whether you live in chutz la'aretz. Afal pishenema, even though it says, uba'aretz achem lo ta'asu, don't do this in your country, where is the Jews' country, Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, mipi ha'shmuel lamdu, we've learned from a tradition, shedavra zeh noeg b'chol makom, this applies even in Chutz La'aretz. The Indian Akos of Loya says Zot B'Yisrael Bein B'Gufam Bein B'Guf Acherim. There you can't have it done to your own body or to another body. But Kol Amasareh, if you do this, Loket Min HaTorah. This is an Issa Doraita. That's true of male animals. However, female animals may be a different matter, because the Pasuk in 28 was talking about male animals. Pasuk number 30, Hamasareh Etana Keva. If a person were to neuter a spay, I think is the correct word, a female animal, bein ba'adam, bein b'sharminim, whether it was a person, or, lahavdil, whether it was an animal, patur, aval asur. Now that's very interesting. Patur aval asur means, ostensibly, that it is a rabbinic prohibition, not a Torah prohibition, but not necessarily, because you may just be patur from malchus, but still it'd be an Issa Doraisa. The Vilna Gaon's position is that it's actually an Issa Doraisa as well. But many of the poskim are that little bit more lenient when it comes to female animals, because there is this added element that maybe it's an Issa Drabonon rather than an Issa Doraisa, and therefore that may kick in when there's a need to help the animal. We'll talk about that in a minute. So Jews are not allowed to spay animals, a lot of neuter animals, certainly with males Doraisa, with females possibly Doraisa, possibly Drabonon. What about non-Jews? Just take your animal to a non-Jewish vet. Make sure you don't have a Jewish vet. And then everything will be fine. The answer is no. Because there are opinions, we'll see right now, that neutering animals is actually one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Interesting. People don't always realize this. Number 31. The Tanabe B'Nash. Number, look at number 31. Sheva Mitzvahs Nitzavu B'nai Noach. There are different versions of the seven Noachide laws. And look at the version in Sanhedrin Nun Vav. Avodah Zarah, that everybody knows, Giloy Arayot, sexual immorality, Shvichat Damim, okay, they are the three biggies, idolatry, sexual immorality, and murder. Gezel, stealing, Eivim Min Achai, cruelty to animals, Sirus, which is what we're talking about here, which is neutering animals, and Kilayim, which is cross-breeding animals, which is very interesting. That is not the classic list that people normally bring, and the Rishonim debate significantly whether Sirus is indeed la halacha la maisa, one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. The Rambam, the Rosh, and the Rashba say that it's not, but the Smag and others say that it is. Now, what does that mean? Sirus means neutering. It's taking, is making the animal infertile by taking away the reproductive organs. Now, if indeed it is the case that a non-Jew is prohibited to neuter an animal as well as the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, then I for sure can't take my animal to the non-Jew. Why not? Because it's Lifnei Iver. There is an Issa Doraita on every Jew of Lifnei Iver Loitit Mishol. You're not allowed to put a stumbling block before the blind. And the Gemara of Avodah Zarah is very explicit that includes encouraging a non-Jew to do something that they are not allowed to do. Obviously, I can help a non-Jew to break Shabbos because a non-Jew doesn't have to keep Shabbos. But I can't sell guns to a non-Jew that they will may use in order to murder people, and I can't encourage a non-Jew to do Avodah Zarah. If neutering animals is also one of the mitzvahs that a non-Jew is not allowed to do, so I can't encourage them to do that either, that will clearly be a problem. And the Shulchan Aruch picks up on this. Look at number 32, in the last source here. He brings down, you can't go to a non-Jewish vet. You can't just go to a non-Jew, to neuter one of our animals. So if you have a dog or if you have a cat, you just can't take it straight to a non-Jewish vet and have it neutered. So what can you do? So the Ramah comes in and says, you're allowed to sell animals, like in commercial trade, to non-Jews. That even though you know the non-Jew is going to neuter the animal for their own purposes, is that okay? And other people say, no, actually even that's not okay. And even when you sell an animal at market to a non-Jew, you have to check that they're not going to neuter it before you can sell it to them. However, he says, one thing you can do. If the non-Jew that buys the animal is not themselves going to neuter the animal, they're going to give it themselves to another non-Jewish vet to do it. That's okay. Why? Why is that okay? Because that becomes not lifnei iver, but lifnei delifnei. Meaning, lifnei iver is prohibitive. You're not allowed to encourage people to do aveiros, but there's a limit. There's only so much of a direct relationship you can be in for it to be a problem. If you sell things, and the Gemara discusses this, if you sell things that people might use for avodah zarah, so you can't sell them to the people that do avodah zarah, but you can sell them commercially, wholesale, and if people buy them and they sell that, fine, then that's fine. You're not responsible. So many links down the chain. There's also an issue of amira la'akum. You're not generally allowed to ask a non-Jew to do anything that you wouldn't be allowed to do. But amira la'amira, asking a non-Jew to ask another non-Jew, that is another stage down the line. In Hilchas Shabbos as well, especially the Sfaradim are more excited about that heter of asking a non-Jew to ask a non-Jew as a way of dealing with it. So halacha l'maisa, what do people do? So I've brought you four comments at the bottom we'll finish with. So one approach is to sell the dog that you own to a non-Jew, who will then take it to a non-Jew to perform a neutering operation. That some poskim say is okay. But even there, some people are unhappy if it's just for convenience. If it's because the animal is in danger in some way, then that's one thing. But if the animal is just, you're just worried about it becoming inconvenient and pregnant, then that's less of a heter. Although again, the poskim are more lenient with female animals for the reasons that we've spoken about. Some poskim recommend, and I brought you down in footnotes, different sources, that if they can neuter the animal in an indirect way, rather than just actually cutting off the organs, they can cause them to die off in some way. Maybe that's better. And certainly, almost all poskim agree that chemical infertility, if you can put your dog on the pill or something like that, or give it some kind of chemical hormonal treatment that will render it infertile, that's fine, because the animal, the only prohibition here is on physically cutting off the reproductive organs. With people, it's less of an obvious heter, because people also have a mitzvah of pru revu. So for people to take birth control, we talked about birth control in this forum, that's a separate shiloh of pru revu, but the animals don't have a mitzvah of pru revu. They got a bracha of pru revu, but they don't have a mitzvah of pru revu. Yes. Yeah, you'll be able to do that. Yeah, you'll be able to do that. That's the whole point. You don't leave it with that non-Jewish, but you end up buying it back again afterwards. But it's a bit of a, so definitely a shiloh, if you own an animal or if you know people who own animals, something to think about. Please God, next week we will continue with some fascinating issues in Hilchas Shabbos, which we haven't really talked about much, and other issues of guide dogs, etc. For now, have a wonderful week, and please God, we'll meet then.